Sweet Tarts dared to combine sweet and tart. But we didn't stop there. We combined soft and bouncy to bring you new Sweet Tarts Gummies Fruity Splits, a uniquely delicious dual-sided gummy with one side that's sweet and one side that's tart, but entirely smooth and squishy. Mmm, a powerfully perfect combo. Sweet Tarts, dare to combine.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet? Well then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
This episode is brought to you by the Weather Channel. It's suggested that brands avoid using sound effects in podcast ads. And remember to speak in a chill tone. Well, here's a suggestion for everyday life. Tap into the Weather Channel app. It's loaded with insights that help you manage your allergies, breathe easy, and
use your outside voice.
What in the weather are you waiting for? Be a force of nature with the Weather Channel app.
Welcome to my travel podcast, Life's a Beach. Every week, I invite a special guest to take us on a journey together to their favourite holiday destinations and to reveal their top travel tips and tales.
Well, who have we got flying with us today on Alan Air? He's an English comedian. He's a film actor. He's a presenter and writer. You may know him from Fresh Meat, Bad Education and Travels with My Father. It's Prince Charming himself, Jack Whitehall.
This is the final boarding call for Jack Whitehall. This is the final boarding call for Jack Whitehall. This is the final boarding call for Jack Whitehall. Jack Whitehall, can you please come to the gate? Jack Whitehall, Jack Whitehall, Jack Whitehall, Jack Whitehall.
Jack Whitehall.
Thank you.
And look who we've got on board. It's Jack Whitehall. Hiya,
hello,
Jack.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Why did you choose Alan Air as a...
I heard they had a very good business class lounge. The finest alcoholic beverages and afternoon refreshments.
There's nothing wrong with a bit of day drinking.
Nothing wrong with a bit of day drinking.
No.
I miss that the most whenever I'm abroad in America, coming back here and remembering that it is acceptable to drink before midday.
I know it is. And also, you know, like when I used to have some Americans on Chatty Man, they were like, you know, I had three wines and I woke up on the kitchen floor and then I realized I had to go to rehab. And I was like, my dog box is my second home. You know what I mean? If you don't wake up on a squeezy bone or like, I've eaten dog chew, I'm like, good night. But no, thank you so much for coming here. What are you like as a traveller? Why do you travel? Obviously, you're a star now. You work in LA. Is travelling still fun for you?
Yeah, I love travelling. I use travel as relaxation. I use it as adventure. I love sort of escaping my life sometimes by going on intrepid travels across the broad. I've also managed to use it for professional purposes as well, which has been quite useful. So I use travel in many different ways.
Yeah.
But I love it. I love traveling.
And what's been the best place you've ever gone to?
The best place I've ever gone to. I really love going to Australia. It had been years in the making going to Australia. I'd always wanted to go. And then I went to Australia and I did like a couple of months there and I absolutely loved it. I loved Australians. I loved the cities that I went to. I loved the, I was about to say culture, but famously not quite as much as of that. I'm sounding like my dad now.
I literally went headlong
into a Michael Whitehall ism. I loved everything about it. I really enjoyed Australia.
I like the way they stick an O on the end of everything, don't you, as well? Because I worked over there and they're like, you know, the woman down there with the flat shoes and the crew cut, she's a lezzo. And they're so blunt, but I love it. You know where you stand with an Aussie.
Exactly. And as I alluded to earlier, like, that's one of the problems with travelling sometimes is that you feel bad about some of your British idiosyncrasies, and you go to Australia and if anything, you feel better about them because they drink more than us, they swear more than us, they're more uncouth than us. It's they are definitely like our cousins. You can sense that when you're travelling around there. Yeah, a lot of C-bombs. Wow. And as a comedian as well, it's a great place to sort of go and tour and do stand-up comedy because they just couldn't give a toss. You can say anything there, and that's quite liberating as well. I enjoy that aspect of it.
And what's this? You did a show, because you're going on tour again, aren't you?
Yeah.
But what is it, baby steps, or you got it set in mind where you're going to go? Because didn't someone slag your hair off? You've got lovely hair.
I'm glad you saw that. They're on Twitter saying that my hair was part of my brand and I need to desperately get a haircut because I've betrayed my fan base and betrayed my brand by having this long hair.
No,
I'm more than just a haircut.
It's lovely hair.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Well, it's not going anywhere.
Oh, no, look at my fucking hair. Look, it's just... this is being recorded as well. Look. So will you be going touring all around the world when you finally do your tour?
Yeah, I think so. I'd like to go to Australia and the States this time round. I didn't get the chance to go to America last time. I was doing a tour because the pandemic came along and I had to cancel a load of dates. So that's still on my wish list. But yeah, I'd definitely like to go back to Australia and do some shows out there. I haven't done it for... 3 years? So I've just started going back up on stage and remembered how much I enjoy it.
But it's so nervous, isn't it, when you go up there with like no jokes and you just got to do that first joke and you don't know whether people are going to like it and you just fault it up or whatever. I mean,
it makes you feel alive though, doesn't it? Like when you do a joke as well, especially when you're trying it out for the first time, like that experience of doing a new bit that you think is so good and doing it in front of like a crowd full of people and it just like playing to absolute silence is like it's a strange feeling to describe because obviously it's like soul crushing but as well it's like getting punched in the face. It's like that thing where just all of the blood is rushing to your head and your fight or flight kicks in and you then have to kind of win the audience back round. And normally they probably haven't even noticed because unless you've really laid it up on a plate, they haven't. Yeah. It's been so bad that they haven't even realised it was an attempt at a punchline. But I do quite enjoy it in a sadomasochistic way. Yeah. Like there's nothing else like that. There's no other experience of just doing a joke and it not landing and there being complete tumbleweed. And I've definitely had a few of those moments. I'm not really selling the prospect of coming to see me on tour. By the point I am actually doing live shows, they all would have been eradicated. But at the moment, there is a fair amount of silence.
But you've got to start. That's what people don't understand. You start out and it's going to be like, you know, at best, 70% shy, 30% good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I did a gig in Islington and it was the first time I come back after Tooth Fairy. Mm. So everyone loved that show. And then I died on my ass. I didn't even finish the 10 minutes. As I walked off, the post-it note with my jokes on fell out my hand and stuck to the floor. I had to come back on and physically pick my jokes off the floor. And you know my fat fingers and I've got no nails and I was there just scraping up my jokes to silence. No. And I thought, what a fucking metaphor for how this gig's gone. Scraping it off the floor. As if anyone would steal this post-it note anyway.
No.
Oh, and Alan Carr's jokes.
The worst is if you'd come back on in 10 minutes time after they'd all filed out and you'd seen a couple of like red lines through some of the topics and they'd like, no, that needs work. Drop that bit. That would definitely be in the 70% shite bracket. Last time I was doing work in progress, I decided it would be a fun gimmick at the beginning of the show to come out in a full mime outfit and do as long as I could of the show in mime. I thought it would be hilarious because they've come to see work in progress. They've bought tickets. They don't know what the show is. And maybe I have taken it in a new direction. And I went out. It was at the O2 in Shepherd's Bush, so quite a big crowd as well of paying punters. And I walked out and I was like, I'm going to commit to this. No matter what happens, I'm doing this bit. And I went out as the mime. And I think I was wearing so much makeup and the hat and stuff, you couldn't even really tell that it was me. So they thought that maybe it was like the opening act. I went out and I did it and I just kept going. And no lie, laughter at all. Like, literally so awkward. And then I was like, I think I'm going to have to break character. Otherwise, people are going to start walking out. So then I was like, surprise, it's me. You thought the whole show was going to be like that. And they were like, no, we just thought it was fucking weird. But then I hadn't thought through that I would then have to continue doing the rest of the hour. So I had to do an hour of new material in a mime outfit with a beret and one of the Pizza Express t-shirts and a little chalked up face.
Oh,
shit. Terrible.
It's best never to do that. When I was in Reading on my last tour, I was so bored of the tour. They were doing My Fair Lady and there was this really funny black wig. And I thought, I'm going to just do the show in that. And I came out with the black wig. No one noticed, no one cared. Yeah. And then just halfway through, I just slid the wig off and just went through it. I thought, they are going to piss when they see me in a wig. And they're like,
no.
Yeah. You
were the human equivalent of that Homer Simpson meme backing into the bush.
Yes,
it's that, yes, isn't it? It's that moment where you're just like, okay, this bit hasn't worked. Goodbye.
We would firstly like to welcome on board any of our passengers with small children, and then secondly, any mime artists. If the passengers with small children could make their way through door A, and if the mime artist could pretend to go down some stairs with a large suitcase into an imaginary basement, that would be much appreciated. Thank you for your assistance.
So tell me somewhere you've been that you've absolutely hated, and we're not slagging off. This is a safe space, which we're going to get to in a minute.
Yeah.
Name of your new podcast. Indeed. So where have you been and you've gone? We're not dissing a place, but you know, sometimes shit's happened. You've lost your luggage, you've had food poisoning.
Where have I had a nightmare situation that I remember just because it was the first time I'd ever done travels with my father, and we traveled to the Far East, and it was the first experience of doing that show. It's the first experience of my dad ever really traveling outside of Europe. And so, you know, we were kind of, you know, it was the unknown, and we'd booked the trip, and I think we booked like 2 months worth of traveling, which in hindsight was far, far too long. Ooh. And as the series progressed, the time frame that we went traveling got shorter and shorter and shorter, to the point of like the last season of Travels with My Father that we did it in the UK over the course of 3 weeks, and there couldn't be more than like a 3-hour drive from his house. But that time we did it for 2 months, and it was right at the end of the 2 months, and we were in Vietnam, and we were in like northern Vietnam in like quite a rural area. Oh. And we had a 5.5-hour car journey up to the top of a mountain to visit a community in Vietnam where all of the women are in charge, and we thought it would be a really fun like place to take my dad and sort of wind him up. And it was basically one joke that we were going to take him to this little village at the top of the mountain, and then surprise daddy, here everyone in charge is a woman. You don't like that, do you, you old bigot? Like that was it. That was and it was totally my idea. I was like, this will be so funny. But we had broken him by that point. Like you know, he was in his late 70s at this point. He didn't really want to go on the trip in the first place. He was already cantankerous and wanting to go home after a week. 2 months in, and we were like, we got 4.5 hours into this car journey, and he'd been ranting and raving, and we were halfway up the mountain, and he was like, I'm not doing it, I will not get out of the car. And I realized that he was serious, so I had to stop like the fleet of cars with all of the producers in the other cars as well, and I had to just get them all out. I'm like, we're gonna have to have a little time out here. I genuinely think he's done now. He's like, the safe word has been shouted out, and we're gonna have to turn around. So we had to turn around all the cars and drive back down the mountain, and he had to have 2 days of just decompressing in a 5-star hotel, and then we had to get on a plane to come home and not do it again for another 2 years.
Because what was holidays like with him as a kid? Has he always been cantankerous, or has he got worse?
He just doesn't do anything. Like when we were on holidays as kids, like me and my mum and my brothers and sisters, we would all go off and do things, and then he would just sit in a villa in the south of France reading the Times or books about, you know, Mussolini, and that would be our holidays. He would sit there reading books about dictators, and then we would go and visit you know, markets and go to, you know, do fun excursions and Roman ruins or whatever. And he would just remain in the hotel and drink and read about fascists. And that worked great. And so in that environment, he sort of works. But whenever he has to do anything or he has to be active or his fascist books are taken away from him, then he gets quite angry.
Did you ever have a lad's holiday? Did you ever go to Magaluf where you just forget all your morals?
Yes, I've been on quite a few of those lad's holidays.
Do you still got, you suppose, you know, you got a girlfriend now. You've got to kind of just be a bit more mature, haven't you?
Has she spoken to you? you've had words, haven't you? Did she text
wants me to
you?
Do an intervention.
Yeah. No, I think probably my lad's days are very much numbered. I did go to Ibiza this year because I do love Ibiza and I've been there.
Do you like nice side or the bad side? Because Ibiza, I've said this before, and it brings out either your evil side or your good side.
Yes. The evil side. I always have good intentions, and I'm always told that there is this good side of the island, and you can go and do yoga and stuff. I haven't yet quite found it. Like, it's maybe more of something you do during daylight hours. But no, I absolutely love going there. And so that summer I've been quite a few times and had a few lads' holidays there. First lad's holiday I went with my mates, and I was still living at home at the time, and I always remember that I got out there and my mum had managed to somehow get into my suitcase, and I opened it up on day one of this lad's holiday, and there were 30 condoms packed in my bag that she had smuggled into the bag. I was there for 3 days. I was like, how much use do you think these would get? Like, I was a very awkward, like, 19-year-old boy.
How horny were you?
I know! It's insane! And the funny thing is, I counted them when I came back, and there were 31. I had gained a condom rather than used any of them on that trip.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet? Well then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
The other thing that happened on, I don't think it was that holiday, but it was certainly one of my earlier lad's holidays. I think I'd been to Estonia with some of my friends. This is not great. Again, still living at home with my mum and still very much a mummy's boy at the time. And she, at that point, had access to all of my bank accounts and bank details. And I remember waking up one morning and her calling me and her going, what were you doing last night? And I had been to a club with some friends at which there were some ladies dancing of an exotic nature.
Oh.
And she said to me, yes, there is a large transaction made last night at 10 o'clock at a place called Sin, S-I-N-N. And I was hungover and somehow managed to think on my feet. And I was like, oh, yes, that is a Japanese restaurant. Sin Sushi. We went there. I took my friends and I treated them to a delicious meal of sashimi and miso soups and tempura prawns and all such things. Hence why it was quite expensive. But it was a delicious sushi restaurant. It was one of the best Japanese meals I've ever had, Mother. And she went, yes, it must have been very good because there was another transaction made at midnight and 1 o'clock. I was like, we were very hungry. We were very very, very hungry boys. Growing boys.
Here on Alan Air, we are proud to have partnered up with Sin Nightclub as we introduce our in-flight cocktail menu. Why not sit back and enjoy a cock gobbler or flaming gash? Or just get your lips around a long, hard finger. It's got to be happy hour somewhere.
Are you adventurous on holiday? Will you try the street food and everything?
Yes, I will. I will try to be as adventurous as possible. I think again because of sort of my upbringing and living in the household that I did. You know, we weren't fed very adventurous food because my dad had a sort of war diet. I guess it was all like very bland, unseasoned food and spam and potatoes and two veg every night, obliterated. Like, so we never really were able to eat anything exotic. which means the minute I was able to go away on my own and travel without him, I definitely became far more adventurous with what I wanted to eat and to try to broaden my palate. And so I am, a bit of a foodie as well. So I do love eating out when I'm abroad.
What's the most extravagant thing you've popped in your mouth? Because we had Damon Albarn here and he had monkey brain soup.
Oh, wow.
I mean, he made me just feel like I had no get up and go. You know what I mean? Like, oh, I've had Thai street food. It was like, you piss on the shark. It's a Viking recipe and it ferments and you bury the shark and then you dig it up and then you eat it.
Oh.
The recipe's on CFAX for anyone listening. Have you ever done anything like that?
Yeah, I've eaten some quite gruesome things.
Pissed on shark?
Not a pissed on shark, no.
you freak.
I shat on it. I didn't. That's not a thing.
Brown shark. Was it brown? My own feces.
What have I eaten? I ate in China. I ate quite a lot of...
They try everything there.
No, yes. It's not like the Chinese food that maybe we're accustomed to in
the UK. That's what people say when they go there. Ollie Mers, he was on here and he was worried about being cancelled because he said, the food was disgusting. Well, I don't want to get cancelled. You can slag off someone's cuisine. If you don't want to eat fucking, what is it, chicken heads... Or the feet. Have you ever had the chicken feet?
No, I have had chicken feet. I also had a broth. I mean, exactly as you'd expect them to taste, very gristly and unpleasant. I had a pork broth that I ordered in China.
Why not just have a breast or a thigh? Why have the feet?
Why have the feet? Why do they do it?
I don't know. And you don't know where the feet's been. No waist.
You know, nose to beak, not nose to beak. Beak, no, foot to nose to beak. That's not a lot of the animal at all.
nose to tail. That's a very small part of the chicken.
You should eat. I only eat nose to beak.
I'm an extreme diet. Just nose to beak.
It's essentially fasting. nose to tail. I've had feet. I've also ordered a pork broth in China that came, and it was like a broth of. Like a clear broth, and in it a pig's knuckle with a straw in the knuckle, so you could suck out the marrow from the pig's knuckle in the broth.
Poor pig.
And I get quite like British in that situation. I was too awkward to send anything back or say this wasn't quite what I'd envisaged when I'd ordered the broth. I was expecting like a kind of Wagamama ramen.
Instead,
so I'm there trying to slurp it up and suck this marrow.
So basically
marrow.
A trotter poking out.
And you've got to suck up the... Blah.
No.
Oh, it's actually making me retch even thinking about it.
That's disgusting.
Yeah.
Can you imagine this just hand coming out of a soup? It'd be terrifying. Do you remember a curry when that hand comes out of the grave? But a trotter.
Or you could do it with a chicken's
claw
as well, if you wanted to try it in that. Dress it up and then maybe you'd find it more appealing. I actually met my girlfriend in Australia. And it's a way you have to be careful, I think, with Chinese food. I took her on our first ever date and I'd asked around because I'm obviously not from Australia and said, what's the best restaurant in Sydney? And someone told me there's this great Chinese restaurant and we went there and she arrived and we sat down and she told me that she was a vegan and she'd just gone vegan and was, you know, this was like the first month of being a vegan and how excited she was to be a vegan. Oh, no. And they sat her down and she was literally in front of a wall of ducks that were just strung up behind her. Oh, I was like, oh God, this maybe wasn't the right restaurant to choose. And also of all the seats in the house, why this one? So we had this meal. And then afterwards I was like, well, let's leave this horrible, like, you know, massacre behind us
duck
and go
graveyard.
And have this duck graveyard. I'm sorry, this is very triggering for you. We'll go to a bar because I got recommended a really lovely bar in Sydney as well. And so we left the restaurant, we went to this bar and it was like something out of a sitcom. I opened the door to this bar and the bar was taxidermy themed. Every animal you could possibly conceive of, beheaded and stuffed and hung on the wall. And I walked in, I was like, at this point it feels like whoever gave me these like recommendations knew exactly what was going on and is just winding me up. I'm so sorry. We can stay here if you'd like, or we could go and try and find somewhere that doesn't have dead animals hung from the wall. There must be somewhere in Sydney.
Yeah, vegan friendly.
It is vegan friendly.
Made of corn or something.
Yes, there's just tofus hanging from the walls.
I had something like that when we went to P-Town, the province town. It's like gay Disneyland. Everyone is gay there. Everyone is gay. The postman's gay. No. Everyone is gay. And then we went to this gay bar and we kept bumping into this gay couple. And I was like, and they came in the gay bar. I was like, oh, fucking, it's them again. I said, well, let's go upstairs.
Yeah.
We went upstairs. Oh, my God, on this widescreen telly. It was the most graphic gay porn you've ever seen. And, of course, they come upstairs. I'm having a white wine next to this and I really wish I'd just stayed downstairs. I didn't know it was up there.
No.
Quick, hide from them. I was like, hi. Big fucking screen. I'm just so disgusting going on.
Were you on your own?
No, I was with my, Paul, my ex. Oh. But the only way it could have been worse if I was sitting there basically having a wank by myself.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. I had a gig that I booked in Los Angeles. Well, I didn't book it, okay? This was after my last tour, and I just finished my tour, and I think the final date that I'd done had been the O2, and I flew out to America, and I said, could you just book me a couple of gigs? Because I don't want to go, you know, rusty. I'm thinking of doing some shows out in the States, so can you book me a couple of shows in Los Angeles? You know, expecting them to put me into some modestly sized theatres. I wasn't expecting the O2, but I got sent this this address for this gig that they'd booked me. I landed off the plane. I went there. I got to the address, and I looked up, and I said, this can't be right, because it was a sex shop. It was a sex shop in the middle of West Hollywood. And I called the agent. I was like, you've sent me the address for the gig, but I'm outside it, and it's a sex shop. There's like a load of bull gags hanging in the window and an array of dildos. This can't be right. And they're like, oh, no, sorry, we didn't mention that. It is in a sex shop, but it's sort of out back, and it's kind of a quirky night. Comedians love it. You'll have a great time. I walked in there, and there was no stage. It was like 30 seats set out in the middle of an active sex shop with other people looking around. And I said, you know what? My ego is you know, like moderate, but there are standards that I have, and I'm afraid this is the threshold. I'm not doing a gig in a sex shop. So just tell them that my plane got cancelled. I never arrived. I perished in the ocean. I don't care what you say. I'm afraid I'm not going to do the gig. And I hung up, and then the owner of the gig, the guy that was running it, walked over to me and he was like, are you here for the comedy show? And I went, no, I'm not. And then realised that because I'd said no, I'm not, the only other explanation for me being in there was that I was a customer. So then I had to browse. I was like, should I buy something? If I buy something, would that throw him off the scent that I'm actually a comedian that's like wimped out of doing his sex shop gig? I looked at a couple of dildos, did some window shopping, and then walked out and went home and was like, I think that's it for my American career.
Listen, we all like a quirky venue, but that's a piss take.
That is a piss take.
That is a sex shop. No one wants to perform there.
No, and piss taking there. I think there were some funnels as well there. It was, you know, they had everything. It was tawdry.
I was once in a sex shop, and there was this discreet clit stimulator on this mannequin. And I thought, oh, let's have a look. So I pressed the button. Fucking hell, the mannequin flew off with the vibration. It was so much. Oh, well, this isn't discreet. But then what can you say? Like, oh, bleh. Threw off the display unit. You're picking up a mannequin and popping it back on. Try before you buy.
Can we remind our passengers that the use of clit stimulators on Allan Air is strictly prohibited, but can be used in the toilets if popped on airplane mode. Thank you.
Do you complain? Do you complain on holiday?
No, I tend to not complain. I get a bit awkward.
But then do you do like a nasty thing on TripAdvisor? You're quite malicious.
No, I wouldn't. And also, I think whoever I'm with, be it like my girlfriend or if I'm traveling with my family, like I'm get very embarrassed if someone else is making a scene as well.
Yeah, okay,
never make a scene. No. For me, like that's the, you know, the cardinal rule, and we'll always try and pacify a situation.
Have you ever complained, though? Say you get a smoky room. Say there's a fag burn on your pillow. Say there's a pube on your pillowcase.
I just, honestly,
You suck it up?
Well, I wouldn't suck it up. I'd blow it off, I think, probably.
What does
that
mean?
Well...
Oh, I thought... Yeah,
not physically blow it off, Alan.
I would.
I thought you were going to blow off the hotel manager.
You thought I would fellate the pube on my pillow. No, I would blow it
no,
to get
you
rid
see,
of it.
That's all the sex talk. Yeah, I fucked the... with my mind.
Yeah, really, I had.
Blew it off. You make me sick, people like you. Suck off a pube.
I would remove it from my pillow.
Oh, okay.
Discreetly.
Yes. Sorry, English is my first language.
Or maybe a flick it off. But I don't think I would complain.
Okay, you've got a show, very important show in LA, and they put in a sex shop, dildos to buy, and they put you in the room next to the lift, and all you can do is ping. Does that get on your nerves? Has that ever happened to you? Because that happened to me.
See, again, I'd be like, well, that's on me. I've got to somehow try and
God.
Get
Man
some...
Man up, Jack. I never thought earbuds I'd be saying in. To you, man up.
No. I don't know. I think it's because, I grew up with a father that complained all the time and ranting and raving, and it's left me
it
quite scarred.
It doesn't really get you anywhere, does no. it, all the ranting and raving?
No, we were in a restaurant in Hungary, and we went to like a haute cuisine experience in Hungary, and there was a waiter that... my father took umbrage with, and it was like, I remember all of the items on the menu were quite really reductive descriptions of the, like it, the starter was just called egg, or like the dessert was strawberry, and he'd ordered strawberry and it was taking forever, and I was like, well, it's fine, you know, I'm sure when it comes out it'll be great. And he was like, no, I'm gonna say something. And he got this waiter over, was like, why could you ask the chef why on earth this strawberry dessert is taking so long? And the waiter was like, it's taking long because the chef is not making dessert, he is making art. And I was like, oh God, why have you said that? That's like literally like you've just kicked the hornet's nest. And like I could see like the vein tremoring on Dad's forehead. I was like, oh God, he's going to blow now. He's like, oh, it's fucking art. Art? What do you mean art? Go and tell him that his piece of art is going to be delivered out here in 10 or 15 minutes time. And then I'm going to consume it. And his art is going to be turned into a shit later on tonight. Would you tell him that? I was like, please don't tell him that. You do not need to tell him that.
I looked on your Instagram.
Yeah, on the gram.
Yeah, on the gram. Looked at the grid. You've been to Florence. What did you think of Florence? Because it's one of my favourite places.
Oh, yeah, I love Florence.
Did you go for sexy time with Roxy?
No, I went for corporate-sponsored content time. Slightly less sexy.
Well, I'm hard. I'm into that.
The most romantic city in the world. Yeah. And I was going there courtesy of Bira Moretti.
No. You want to go back there because it's so sexy and lovely and romantic.
Yeah, what did I do in Florence? I can't think now.
Well, no, it doesn't matter. I just think it's a nice place to go.
Yeah, but I was there just taking the corporate dollar
on
my knees on those cobbled streets.
I've done that. I've sucked the corporate cock. I don't mind who knows it.
And I do so in the most romantic city in the world.
I know, Florence, it is a shame. You should have done like Milton Keynes or
I know.
Somewhere like that. But Florence is beautiful.
I don't know whether that would have washed with Bira Moretti. I feel like they were the main drivers behind it being Florence. I'm sure if I'd suggested Milton Keynes, they might have been like, this isn't quite on brand for us.
So tell us about your podcast, Safe Space. What's it about?
Safe Space, yes. So, I have a podcast. I mean, I guess it's inevitable eventually, isn't it?
I know. I was a bit like, everyone does a podcast, but they are fun. And
yeah, they are fun. They're great.
And have a laugh and a giggle.
And I feel like it's the question I got asked the most, when are you going to have a baby? Why haven't you learned to drive? And when are you going to have a podcast? And I thought, of the three, I think a podcast is probably going to be the least commitment at this juncture and might be the easiest to just sort of do. I'm doing the podcast. It's called Safe Space. It's a place where people can come and they can share their most embarrassing tales and get them off their chest. I sort of feel like that's something that we do as comedians, and we have this amazing outlet. If something embarrassing happens to us in our lives, we can go on stage and tell people in a theatre, and it's quite a cathartic experience. So I thought we'd try and create this space where guests and callers can bring their most embarrassing woes that have been keeping them up at night into the safe space, and we can share them together, and hopefully they can move on with their lives. So that's the idea behind it.
Because it's a weird job what we've got, isn't it? I mean, like I've mentioned this before, but I end up shitting myself on an Inca monument in Mexico, where most people would be horrified. But I just go, ooh, material.
Exactly.
This will be funny.
I know, you're never present, are you? If something terrible happens to you, no matter what it is, all you're thinking is how quickly can I get to my phone and write this down as a note so that hopefully in a couple of months' time I could work this up into a bit and deliver it on stage dressed as a mime.
And when's this safe space out? Is it out now?
It's out at the end of November.
And you're busy? Bad Education's back?
Bad Education is back, yes. That's been great fun, revisiting it 10 years later. And we've done this special reunion episode where we say goodbye to my character, Alfie Wickers. And then we've rebooted the series with two of my original class, Leighton Williams and Charlie Wernham, now working as young teachers at the school. So it's been very fun sort of producing that and taking a slightly different role in the capacity of like sort of show running it and working with these amazing like young writers and new actors and stuff and producing the show. So yeah, that's been really exciting and hopefully will be a treat for all of the fans of the original series as well.
Oh, that's nice. I mean, I love Lainey came to see my stand-up show and guess who I haven't told anyone, guess who came to see me, Sweden show?
Who?
Greta Thunberg.
What?
Yes. Can she come backstage? I was like, I'd those fucking plastic bottles. I was like, honestly, I was like, no. Everything.
Really?
My gorilla hand ashtray, I put it straight in the bin. No, that's... No. Elephant boot. Umbrella stand. No.
Look at that toilet. Hasn't even been flushed. That's how much I love the
drink
environment.
This toilet water. Yeah. Hey, yeah. What's that, Mother Earth? You're welcome.
Yeah. Get a whiff of that. Not showered in a week. Which on tour is quite the commitment, Greta.
I know. Bless. That's how sweet is that, though? Lovely, isn't it?
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah. Very nice.
Greta Thunberg.
We will shortly be arriving in Ibiza. Can you please put on your seatbelts, stow away your glow sticks, and make sure you're in the mash-up position. Cross-check to manual, cross-check to manual. Thank you, cabin crew.
Well, we're about to start our descent now.
Mm.
So I just got time for a quick fire quiz, OK?
Quick fire quiz.
Mojito or mint tea?
I shouldn't have taken a drink just before the quick fire quiz. That wasn't very well thought through. I'd like a mojito, please.
Mojito, lovely.
Wait, mint tea or like a Long Island ice?
No, it's either alcoholic or not.
Oh, got it, yeah.
Nudist or not on your Nelly? Have you ever skinny dipped abroad?
Oh my God, yes, so much. Naked all the time. Like some of the family videos that my mum has managed to dig out. It's insane. To an age where it is totally unacceptable. She showed me one of us on a holiday in France. I've got to be 16 or 17 years old. And it is me naked in the pool playing water polo with all of my siblings. All of them in costumes. Mum in a costume. Sister in a costume. Me. The ball goes out of the pool. I get out to go and get it. I'm completely stark bollock naked. So weird. But yeah, a lot of nudity.
Okay, that's good to know. Sarong or thong?
Sarong or thong? I would go thong. Just thong.
Thong.
Just the thongs.
Why not? Hey, that's not overdressed for you.
That's overdressed for me, yeah.
Mozzie guard. No thanks, I'm hard. Do you pack Mozzie guard? Will you take a Mozzie net? Or do you care?
I'll take a Mozzie net.
When you go abroad, will you pack all your little Mozzie guard things, or just go? Do you get bitten a lot?
Yeah, a fair amount. Well, I'm not wearing any clothes as well, so there's plenty of surface area to suck.
So much to bite. And then last but not least, tip 'em or fuck 'em. Do you tip 'em or do you go, fuck you, I'll never see you again?
Tip 'em.
That's very
big
nice.
Tipper.
I knew you'd be a lovely tipper. That's lovely.
A lovely big tipper.
Now we're back to the dildo shop. I'll have a lovely big tipper, please, in hemp. Thank you so much for flying, Alan Air.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for flying, Alan Air. Thank you, Jack Whitehall. Jack's podcast, Safe Space, is available now on Audible. And don't miss the Bad Education Christmas special on December the 15th. What's that, dear listeners? Can you have a best-of episode of Life's a Beach next week, where we revisit the funniest stories, the cheekiest trips, and the best guests? Well, you've been such good boys and girls this year. You deserve it. Just see it as a special gift from me, Alan Carr. Yes. Life's a beast.